This is Chapter 2 of The War on Waste Innovation, Part 5, CEO Calculus. One day I was playing golf with a former client who had successfully managed to sell his business for significant personal gain. He deserved it. He had not only worked hard, but he had worked smart. But he made an interesting observation. He said, if I were ever to do and start and run another business, I would spend my time working on the value-added part of the business and leave the accounting and other administrative functions to accountants and the arithmetic crowd. I would work on the calculus. In his words, this was CEO calculus. I thought about this a bit. He was really saying, don't get sucked into the details. Work the broad picture. Don't lose your vision. Others can do the arithmetic, the accounting, the presenting of charts, and so forth, on basically what you mean by output of your business. The job of the CEO is to engineer the business with his problem-solving skills and a vision about where the business should be going. The CEO should be building the bridge using his CEO calculus so that employees can move to the next level of performance. And he noted that that is not accomplished in the boardroom. It is accomplished by seeing the execution of strategy firsthand and by knowing that the bridge that he created will support the organization. The CEO needs to spend his or her time focusing on the part of the business that delivers value to the customers. The value adders of the organization are those responsible for providing the products or services that customers buy. They do the value adding. My client's reason for spending time with the value adders had very simple logic. Cost accounting and other administration functions only deal with the reduction of overhead and cost containment issues. The value-added part of the business allows you to increase your margins, improve return on internal growth, and reduce working capital ratios. By focusing on the value-added part of the business, it is possible to improve cycle times of products, reduce lead times, monitor the execution of strategy, sense customer satisfaction, see how strategy is being delivered, and most importantly, feel the pulse of the company. Insubordination versus treason. On a number of occasions, I've had the opportunity of working with CEOs who had problems with managers that required special attention. The problem usually boiled down to a situation where a manager or executive had objected to a particular decision that had been made by the CEO. The problem occurs because the dissenting manager saw the decision as being bad for the company, or he saw it as being inconsistent with the defined strategy. In other situations, the dissenting manager or executive made the objection as a way to challenge the authority of the CEO. In either case, what do? Do you allow insubordination? My answer is yes. Sort of. Because it is only through no blame and rebellious, honest dissent can you encourage managers to offer objections to the ideas that haven't been clearly or cleanly defined. As a CEO, you have to have the confidence in your managers that they are offering objections because they care about the company. So you have to allow for insubordination that might occur when a manager steps up and objects to a decision that has been made. In some way, and at some point, after the objection has been discussed, data re-examined, and a new decision is made or the old one stands, in either case, the insubordination had better become support or the issue of treason arises. As for treason, this is a more difficult situation. If in this situation above, the dissenting manager fails to get on board after additional consideration is given to the objection, then it is possible that treason needs to be considered. I call it treason Because when a CE involves with the war on waste, and it is an ongoing initiative, and a direct order is refused after significant discussion, then treason has occurred. And treason is a capital offense. In the political menu, it means death. In the war on waste, it means termination. Let me give you a good example of how this might have occurred. In one company, the CEO had called a staff meeting. All of his executives and key managers were in attendance, including his son, who was one of the managers. His son was the heir apparent and was a bit on the feisty scale. He was aggressive, smart, and impatient. He didn't like anyone to challenge him. His father had asked me to help control his harangues at meetings and to teach him about business manners. I liked the young man because I could see a lot of his father in him, but he was a jerk on occasion. In this particular meeting, the son made a proposal. He had not thoroughly analyzed the consequences of his recommendation and began to get angry when various other managers started to object to key parts of his proposal. You could see his glare, and it was nasty. One manager, who I really liked, was particularly rough on the young heir. He thought that the idea was a bad one and didn't mince any words about it. The young heir was beginning to lose it and accused the dissenting manager of treason. The dissenting manager was not willing to back down because he knew he was right and pointed out to him that he didn't care what his opinion was anyway because he couldn't do anything about it because deciding treason was his father's responsibility. And at that point, the father broke in and told everyone to cool down. As the CEO, he told everyone that the decision had been good. He had heard enough and decided to table the discussion and created a committee of three, the son, the dissenting manager, and me, to resolve the issues and come up with a recommendation at the next meeting to either fix the issues, table the idea forever, or collect more data. I have to admit, that was one of the greatest challenges that I've ever had as a consultant. The heir apparent was going to be there, the dissenting manager was a valuable employee, and the issue that had the heir apparent had raised was worthy of further analysis. We did that. The young heir had a chance to spend more time with this manager and appreciated his value, and the manager had a chance to make a valuable contribution to the company. Trust me, it is never easy to distinguish between insubordination and treason, but recognize that there is a difference and give the dissenting employee the benefit of the doubt. An American management paradox. A paradox is defined by Webster's as a statement that seems contradictory, unbelievable, or absurd, but that may also be true in fact. What I am calling an American management paradox arose from an observation of a friend who was always amused by Americans. He was from Canada. He had figured out that America's strength as a company was a paradox. According to him, Americans have a strong sense of individualism, but they hold a fierce competitive drive to compete. And yet when Americans put people in corporations, we take away the employee's sense of that individualism. We make the individual conform. My friend's observation was that if you could define an organization that managed the individualism, but did so by placing the individual in a work environment that encouraged competition between work teams, a strong organization would evolve. He felt that a good management system would benefit by using the paradox to its advantage by restoring to the employee his or her individualism. Naturally, that is a challenge. But that is what we do in the war on waste. We start by allowing individuals to express their individualism when they rise in the classroom to identify a waste. A top-down, highly structured organization is going to try to get conformity in its management of employees. They're going to be managed, and the spirit of individual achievement is going to be crushed. So in the war on waste, we create a pathway for ideas that challenge the status quo. We want ideas. And an environment that supports ideas and renegade resources of these ideas is a bit different. This company is fun for the employees and profitable for the owners. As ornery and independent as many of these people are, this new organization is fragile in that a malevolent manager can do significant damage in resisting the movement to the new culture. We call these people Black Knights. See later. They get their name from the character in the Monty Python movie In Search of the Holy Grail. The Black Knight failed to admit his problems and was in total denial that he had a problem. He was missing his arms and legs. These creatures can destroy a war and waste program. Our job as facilitators always has been to convert them or crush them when they fail to convert. We do this with the CEO's backing. If the CEO has hired us to do a war and waste, then getting rid of obstacles to its success is very important. One of the ways we get the individuals to participate in the improvement of business is to make the participation a game. We introduce the concept of world records, see later world records reports, as a way to get people thinking of competition. Break a world record and get recognized. The world record is explained later, but is very simply a way to put different teams up against each other and measuring their performance against the best they ever done, and in many cases, the best any team has ever done. And boy, did the teams of individualists love this competition. They had to work with their teams to compete. It was a Three Musketeers mindset, all for one and one for all. But this works, trust me. If a CEO wants to know how to get the game started, read the segment on world record reports. Or if you want to read a story about it, read The Tribal Knowledge Paradox, Using the War on Waste to Align Strategy with Process by this author. The paradox presents management in the United States with a big challenge. It boils down to saying that management has to avoid confusing shareholders, employees, and customers by saying one thing and doing another. This is the basis of the paradox that serves as a central thesis of another book, The War on Waste Paradox. This is the end of Chapter 2, Part 5. If you want to reach me, you can at len@bertain.com or by phone at 510-520-8011. Thank you very much. See you in the next section.